Hi there, I'm Ben Morton and welcome to my podcast. The aim of the show is to really dig into the art and science of leadership through interviews with MDs, CEOs and other senior leaders. In doing so, I'm going to try and decode and identify all of the things that we can be doing personally to become even better leaders for our organisations and for those that we have the privilege and responsibility to lead. In this episode, episode number 3, I'm joined by Tracy Woodward, who has worked within the beauty industry for over 30 years on brands such as Clinique, Estee Lauder, Donna Karan, Aveda, Urban Retreat at Harrods and Harvey Nichols, all before becoming the global CEO of Aromatherapy Associates and The Refinery. In this episode, Tracy talks about her belief that a leader's job is to listen more than you talk, to look for the potential in others and find opportunities for them, and how ultimately, as a CEO, you're just one piece of the puzzle. At the very end of the episode, just as we were finishing up and I was about to stop recording, she casually dropped in another brilliant pearl of wisdom around being the athlete in your own life and having a duty to yourself to live the best possible life. I know you are going to get so much value from this episode, so without any further delay, please enjoy my conversation with Tracy Woodward. Hi, Tracy. Welcome to the podcast. It's absolutely fantastic to have you on the show today.
Thanks for inviting me, Ben. It's a real honour to be here.
So, Tracy, can I start off, please? It's the first question I love to ask every guest on the show, just to give some context, really. So can you tell us sort of who you are, what you're doing right now, work-wise, and a little of the journey or backstory, if you like, that's gotten you here?
Yeah, of course. An absolute pleasure again. Been in the beauty industry for, I'm 54 now, so divorced for the second time. I'm left with a tortoise and my 29-year-old son living above my garages. Today, I think I'm, like everybody, searching for the new normal, whatever that looks like. I feel like we've fast-tracked, 5 years from a sector perspective and positioning, but I'm working on various different projects. My background is, formerly CEO, managing director, worked on the Marks & Spencer's second wave of the beauty concept. It's funny, I always thought that would be the only time I would ever use second wave as a sentence, but obviously I hear it a lot more today. Ran brands like Donna Karan and Aveda, Modern Organic Products, worked with prestigious partners like Harrods, with the Urban Retreat business there on the top floor, and Harvey Nichols. So had a really fabulous career. And as much as work is hard, I feel like I've been in a really fortunate position to be able to do what I love doing for, my entire career. So of course it comes with bumps in the road and challenges at times, but it's been amazing. And I only ever thought that I would be a beauty, and not that, that I'm being dismissive of beauty consultants, but my aspirations was to be, a fabulous counter girl, because they wore good shoes, they looked fantastic, they smelt good, and it was the closest I was ever going to get in the 80s of being like a member of Dynasty or Dallas.
So
it's interesting career, very, very, very fortunate one, I feel.
Yeah, and as you do, Tracy, last week when we was planning this in, I had checked out your LinkedIn profile for a little spot of that professional stalking that we all indulge in from time to time. And so your career history, I just found absolutely fascinating. So I'm just curious to understand sort of how has that journey you've been on professionally, how do you think that has shaped you as a leader? And what would you say are some of the main leadership lessons you've learned along the way as a result?
Well, I think first of all, to the listener, we have to highlight that 14, nearly 15, actually, I could barely read, and certainly, could just about write, copy my name and address. So, I've come a long way from where I started out. And it was in the early days, you know, of not being able to read and write, and working in a chemist, filling shelves and cleaning and filling shelves, that someone actually believed in me and said, you know, I'm surprised you can't do this. Because I had a very troubled upbringing, a very challenging childhood. And so, and I kind of kept that secret for such a long time, because I didn't want to fail, but I always admitted that I didn't know. So I kind of went through my career from being, you know, part of a team on counter, to being the number two, to being the number one, to being an area manager, and then into, you know, national sales, and then, you know, running a company. I've done a stint in travel retail, which was in a really, really exciting time. And I suppose I've always been on the tail of what is new and what is different. And of course, when you step into the uncertainty of a category or what an industry looks like, you actually have to learn as quickly as everybody else. So you tend to find these like-minded, you know, people that want to think out of the box and want to make great changes. And I have been fortunate enough to spend most of my career hanging out with those types of people and getting those types of roles, which is probably how I've ended up now in the clean beauty and the wellness sector, because obviously, as you know, as usual, I mean, some people will say that, you know, I'm part of that trend making. I don't believe that. I mean, I am very prescient because of my, you know, inability to read and write, and not actually going to school every, you know, or college or university. Every role that I've taken has been a learn, and I've looked at the whole team, you know, that I've worked with, whether that be on counter or running, you know, a global company. I've looked at the whole team and what they bring to the mix. You know, you are, as a CEO, you're just one piece of the puzzle, right? And you have to make sure that you facilitate for everybody else. And so when I haven't known or understood, I've asked. And so what I find is that, you know, the smaller brands throughout my career have come to me for support and guidance and a way to figure things out, because they've needed to. And actually, in me helping them figure things out, I've learned and grown as an individual, and helped to grow some brands and more and more, and be adventurous. So I suppose I am, you know, what's the name of the guy that puts out the fires in, you know, he used to put out hundreds and hundreds of fires in Texas. They used to pull him in Red Adair, Ben. I feel a bit like Red Adair, because I kind of see, you know, see a path, and then almost gather as many people as possible to help, you know, to create that path, to get it under control, to direct it, to support it. And I don't know if, you know, if that's spiritual, intuitive, prescient. I don't know how you would put a name on it. But each time I've kind of pushed the boundaries of something new and different, you know, from an urban retreat perspective. You know, before anybody else was talking about wellness, we were looking at gut health. We were looking at the psychology of fitness. You know, when we opened our body clinic there with Hypoxy, we had clinical dietitians, not just nutritionists. So in all elements, I've always tried to be, you know, a little different in what's come to the table and actually shape a new path. And I've been so blessed to work with such amazing people and actually had the opportunity, you know, to say, I don't really get this. Where are you going? What are you doing? And learn from that. So I always feel like I need to learn. I don't think I have imposter syndrome, but I always feel like I don't know enough. And so I think that is, you know, that is how you engage more. That's how you learn to listen more than you talk. Not a good thing to say on a podcast, of course, but, you know, that's for me, that's been my gift. And so my career has been very diverse and lots of groundbreaking brands and unique initiatives, working with some fabulous people that have guided, mentored and supported me. And, you know, as much as people have seen potential in me and given me opportunities, I've seen potential in others and given them opportunities. So I feel very blessed and I'm very, very grateful for that.
That's incredible. There's a couple of questions that come out of what you just said that I would love to ask. And one of them, I guess, is me testing a bit of a hypothesis or pattern that I'm seeing. Of all the guests I've had on the show, so many people have talked about how they were lucky, how they were fortunate, how they were blessed. And I often hear other leaders who I might hear speaking at conferences or I bump into talking about the same sort of three words: being lucky, being blessed, being fortunate. And I always like to ask, like, do you believe that you were just lucky and fortunate, or do you believe it's more a case that you have sort of created your own fortune and blessings and luck?
I think it's a bit of both. I think that, you know, as soon as I learned how to read and write, you know, the first things that I put on my cosmic shopping list, because as soon as I, you know, had that, you know, I went from reading at 15, I went from reading, you know, Janet and John books to Ginny Cooper. And I kept this list of things that I wanted to achieve. And I can still tell you, you know, the first four things that were on there was to, you know, to earn $25,000 a year, to have food in my cupboard and never, you know, have to worry about not, you know, going without, to own a mobile phone. I mean, it's on my list now to not have a mobile phone anymore, and to own a Cartier briefcase. And I can't tell you why I even wanted a Cartier briefcase, but I think I'd seen it on Dallas or Dynasty or one of those, you know, with an and I thought, wow, look at that. It's so wonderful.
Did you ever get one?
I did, yeah. In my Alders days, and I don't know what happened to it. I think I ended up keeping documents in it for a while. I bought a secondhand one actually, but not an outright purchase. So I think that, you know, that remembering where you come from makes you feel very lucky, makes you have gratitude. You know, I lost my brother a few years ago, and we, you know, we trod the same path, but sadly he was an addict, which turned into schizophrenia, which turned him being in a very difficult situation, and, you know, and passing away. And I had to, you know, switch off his life support machine and wait for him to leave this earth. And I think, you know, that, and I look there and I loved him with all my heart, and I kind of thought, you know, that could have been me. I could have, how did I get, and I often lie in bed at night and think, how did I get here? And, you know, I had to say goodbye to him, you know, 3 years ago. So, you know, from that perspective, I think that having that gratitude is what keeps you level-headed. It's what keeps you pushing forward. It's what keeps you not taking anything for granted. And I think that it keeps you respectful of others. And one of the things that always surprises me when you hear leaders talk, and sometimes you say to them, so what have you failed at? And they go, oh, we haven't had many fails. I have found so many times that I cannot tell you how many times or for what, because I don't look at them as failures. I look at them as learnings. And as long as I can learn quickly and as cheaply as possible for a business, then I am doing what's right. So I never look at, you know, failure as being just about not succeeding. I see it as, you know, okay, quick, you know, you were turning left and it's a dead end and now you have to turn right, and how do you get back on track, and how do you do that as cheaply as possible? You know, so for me, I've had hundreds and hundreds, if not thousands, of failings along the way, but I look at them as lessons, and those lessons lead to resilience, which means that, you know, you end up being the type of leader that keeps their head when, you know, change is ahead or there's serious challenges that you have to overcome. And other leaders that don't, you know, that see that as a real problem, don't succeed. And that, you know, is, that makes a big difference, I think, in perspective. And that's what makes people like me have gratitude and feel thankful and are positive, versus, you know, leaders that kind of think, well, you know, I deserve to be here. Look what I've done.
Yeah, that's incredible. I'm really keen to find out if you can share any sort of practical tips for other leaders who might be listening. So you hear quite a lot, don't you, that if there's a fear of failure, companies will never innovate. You'll never have innovation without failure. And I think for lots of leaders, trying to create a culture where it's okay for people to make mistakes, as long as we learn from them, can actually be quite a hard thing to do. And I suspect from what you've said and all the teams you've led, that I suspect you encourage the same view that you have, right? That it's not failure, it's just learning. But what would you suggest for a leader to sort of move their team more to that sort of culture?
Well, I suppose the first thing that I would say is that, how would I position it? The first thing that I would say is that, you know, when I go into an organization and I'm taking responsibility for, you know, a department or a whole company, an entire company, I ask them, how are they feeling? Do they really want to be here? Is this the job that they've always wanted? And so in that perspective, in that sense, what I'm saying to them, Ben, is, you know, if you wake up in the morning and you're not enjoying what you're doing and you don't want to be here, then you won't be here. You won't be here 20% of the time, 30% of the time, 40% of the time, 50% of the time, based on how you're feeling about this organization and my leadership. And I would rather you come and tell me that you were unhappy or couldn't cope or didn't see a future with this organization and let me help you find a better role than be here and not be committed in the same way that I will be committed to delivering success and support to you. And I also admit that I don't have all the answers. So if I have to, you know, take a different view or a different perspective, we are all being paid to drive this business forward. And I don't care if you're the, you know, the cleaner, or the warehouseman, or the person in accounts, or a regional business manager, or a national sales manager, or a vice president. Everybody has a valid point to make a difference. And some of the best ideas have come out of people just trying to make things easier for everybody, a common sense approach. And so I would encourage, and I know people say, well, I haven't got time. I haven't got time to talk to all my people. I haven't got time to have an open door policy. I haven't got time. But if you don't know what's going on in your business and you don't know how your people are performing or how they're feeling about working with you, especially in today's world where, you know, we didn't expect any of this. You know, I was expecting to be on a wellness retreat right now, you know, in Southwest France. So, you know, none of this was anticipated or expected. And so you need the ability to adapt and to build resilience. But that doesn't happen with one individual. That happens with a whole organization. You know, you are stronger together. I hate to say it. You know, I mean, just look at ants. Look at how, you know, nature works. And it, to me, it is that simple. And maybe I'm, you know, naive to work that way. But I am a pretty basic person.
That's incredible. There's so many questions to ask. I just want to, before we lose the thread, I want to go back to something you mentioned a few minutes ago. But you was talking about how you've always been able to see the path and kind of direction, and then kind of rally people around. I think being more strategic or being more visionary is something that people sort of working towards a senior leadership role are often told, right? That you need to be more strategic. You need to see the bigger picture more. Whenever I'm sort of working with people like that, be it one-to-one or on a leadership program, the response I often hear is, oh yeah, that's great, Ben, that I'm being told this, but I've just got so much to do. I just haven't got time to step back and see the bigger picture. How do you manage that? And again, what would your advice be there?
I love that question. Thank you, Ben. I think that the point I would make there is, and I know that both you and I are quite spiritual as individuals, but you know when people say, I haven't got time to meditate, I don't really know how to meditate, I don't know what that's about. And actually, you know, when you do it, you get such clarity of thought, you know, or I don't really like walking, I don't like being in nature. And yet when you do all of these things, you get clarity, you get, you know, your feet suddenly become, you know, firmly on the ground. And I think that to me is really, really interesting, because if you don't have time to know what's going on in your business, you will never make the changes that are required to adapt and survive. And that is essential. And I think that is the big challenge for corporate organizations. And I realize it's not easy. I realize it's like turning the Titanic. But for an example, there would be when I joined Marks and Spencer's, and I, you know, we were looking at how do we take beauty from, you know, customers really not knowing what it was about to really understanding the storytelling of it. I mean, this is 2014, right? 2014-15. I said to them, right, I'm gonna go on the road for 6 weeks. And they were like, on the road? on the road where? So I said, I'm going to go out to the stores and I'm going to, you know, go to the, you know, as far up the country as I can and work my way back down. And I'm going to talk to the customers and I'm going to talk to the store managers and I'm going to talk to the teams and I'm going to find out what the customers are asking. And they were like, well, we could do that in a focus group. We could do a survey. I said, no, I need to hear it, you know, just off the cuff, just asking the question and it coming straight out. So there's not, you know, I always find that a lot of the time you get the true answers when people haven't had to consider, you know, why they're there or the question. So first of all, I went, you know, up and down the country, you know, everywhere from Liverpool, Newcastle to you know, to Brighton, Shoreham, all around there, down to Bristol, and of course all around the M25. And the feedback that I got from the team is that they didn't really know what the business was about. I saw very few store managers. They all said that they didn't have any time to see me. But actually, the conversations that I had with the customers were really cool. And what I discovered is that the customers felt intimidated by other beauty environments, that they felt that they were all on commission and therefore, you know, they were not getting impartial advice. They were judged when they were told that a product was too expensive rather than supported. They loved the fact that they could come into Marks and Spencer's in their jeans and no makeup and not be judged. They loved the fact that they could bring their screaming babies into Marks and Spencer's. The women of 50 and over, which is obviously my age group, loved the fact that they could, you know, look for cool and different things and not feel out of place or not feel too old. I don't believe any of those answers would have been available to me in a focus group or even just asking the consultants that were already in the business. And based on that knowledge, and one of the things that nearly every customer said is, why have you not got more brands that I would recognize in here? Because that would just be perfect. And so that's what we started to build. And we, you know, we quadrupled the business. We delivered great success. It was very, very positive. The team, you know, came up with some fabulous ideas because they could see the change and the evolution of the business. They were all part of that process. You know, I was the orchestra, but they had to, you know, they had to play their the tunes and you know, the instruments. And so that's what I mean about looking for change. Sometimes, you know, you have to go out there and find that information and bring it back to your people. And then you have to carve out what the future should look like. Very difficult for big organizations to do because obviously they're entrenched in procedure and policy. But, you know, as I see it today, if we see people working from home, so many organizations would not allow their staff to do that previously. And suddenly they can. And now they're realizing, you know, actually, if I look at, you know, the facilities that I have and the properties that I have available and I make some changes here, I might actually be able to keep a lot of my people because, you know, I've lost X amount of money off of my bottom line, or whatever their challenges may be. So, you know, business is about adapting and accepting that change will come. And if you choose not to change, then change will just come and get you anyway. So why not be open-minded? And, you know, I just feel like I meet a lot of people that just think, I don't want things to change. I want them to stay just as they are. But really, is that living? Is that evolving a brand? Is that, you know, is that stretching everybody and encouraging, you know, a deeper, more meaningful success? I don't think so. I'm always looking for more.
It's interesting. There's what you talked about, sort of really getting out and talking to customers. I'm really starting to see that as a theme from all the conversations I'm having on the podcast, whether it being getting out, seeing customers, getting out, seeing frontline colleagues in the business, to really, for the leader to really hear firsthand what's going on. As I say, that's a real theme. So that's fantastic. There's one other thing I've got to stop and back up the bus for, to use that phrase that you mentioned earlier, because I suspect if I don't ask you about this, I'm going to get complaint messages coming at me. You mentioned your cosmic shopping list. So tell us what that is, because I'm sure that's not something that everybody's heard of.
I think it was Kenny Everett that inspired me to get a cosmic shopping list, actually. And basically, I kind of, this makes me sound really, really crazy, and I'm kind of talking about my childhood here, really, I suppose, that made me move into the cosmic. I don't know how I didn't fall into really dangerous situations growing up. My life was quite negative and very challenging, and different to, nearly every child that I've ever, every young person I've ever met, really. And I think that, I learned at a very young age not to take things personally. And I don't know how all this happened. And I didn't want to be, a victim of life. And so I kind of, hoped that there was something that would, protect me and keep me safe. And it didn't always work. But a lot of the time it did. And as I got older, I kind of, saw a lot of mental health around me and had the choice to either play the part of the victim or kind of, pack it away. And as soon as I kind of learned how to read and write and then started to progress in my career and had the support, and, people would just appear, whether that be cooking me a good meal or finding me a better job or, supporting me, I just felt the universe was looking after me. And so when I did, get my act together and start moving forward, to me a cosmic shopping list was like a wow. It was like, well, if you put it down, if you write it down and you tell as many people as possible where you want to go and what you want to do and who you want to be, surely what's happened to me today will just continue to keep happening, because that's what's happened in my life. I ask someone to teach me how to read, they teach me how to read, I get a better job, from there I get another job, someone else says, oh, they need someone at a cash and carry, would you like to come, I take that role, and then I apply for a beauty consultant for the Clinique counter, I go to the Westbury House Hotel in Bond Street in a pair of shoes that are three sizes too small, in a borrowed dress, driven there by a very, very dear friend and mentor. I walk into a room and there are hundreds of people waiting, to be interviewed for the job, and I get it. And so I just, if you write it down, if you take ownership for it, if you focus on it, if you look at all the paths that could possibly lead you there and see what you have, then you can make it happen. So I suppose it was my own version of The Secret, really, back in 1980. So, does that answer your question?
Incredible. Yeah, it does. It's fantastic. Thank you.
Sorry, it was a bit long-winded.
The other one... No, it's absolutely perfect. Something else I wanted to pick up on as well, you talked about, you said any new team or business you go in, you like to go around and really ask how people are feeling so you can make sure they're in the right job, make sure they're enjoying work, I guess, and playing at their best. I'm curious, when you stepped into your first CEO role, kind of how did that feel for you? What was that like?
I was terrified. I mean, first of all, I joined Donna Karan thinking that I was going to be a brand manager and an executive in the UK. I didn't realise that I would be running the Channel Islands duty free and domestic, working with a very prestigious PR agency, which was then Caroline Neville Associates, reporting and getting Ernst & Young to manage my payroll, and reporting directly to the vice president in New York, where, suddenly I was going on these business class flights to New York, and the only time I'd been to America was to, go to Florida for my honeymoon, wearing Donna Karan clothes. So, I was terrified when I suddenly realised the depth and responsibility of this role, and cried a lot. I mean, most days, sometimes twice a day. And my office was in my home, but I learned so much. And I think that I was, my boss Cynthia Ahern, who's still an amazing friend now. She lives in New York. I think she was more shocked by my honesty and my ability to kind of say, I don't know how to do this. I can't do this. And we figured out a lot together. And she was an amazing mentor, but I knew that I needed to have like-minded people around me that were learning as they went and were committed to making a difference. And that's what I did, you know. And so together, we were all new, figuring it out and driving business. And so I suppose that's where it really started. That was my first, you know, big responsible role, whereas the other roles have been department managers or buyers or leads within business that, you know, I was a big part of the team and pushed for difference and support, especially at the orders group, because one of the things I discovered there once I figured out what the bonus scheme actually meant was that every time I delivered an additional 1% profit, I got an extra 1% bonus of my salary. So, you know, there are all these things that you kind of figure out as you go along. But I've always kind of stepped up and said, look, you know, I can't quite get my head around that, or where should I go from there? Maybe less so now, but still, you know, I still encourage people to, you know, if you don't understand the question or you don't understand to do what I'm asking of you, just tell me and we'll figure it out, because we can't all know everything. And if we want to do things differently and make things better, we have to look outside at times of our skill set. And, you know, you can learn things on YouTube now. Certainly being a divorcee at 54, I've learned how to do a lot of things around the house on YouTube. So, you know, it's there.
Yeah, absolutely. I've learned how to build, record and market podcasts on YouTube. So everything's out there to learn, right?
That's it. And so, you know, and isn't that exciting that that people now have so many more opportunities? They just have to have some belief. And I think that's the exciting thing about the future. And in a strange sort of way, the exciting thing about COVID, in a sense that, you know, the high street was challenged, you know, it back in 2014, you know, in my mindset, this has been going on forever. And actually what we've fought, you know, is just add more stuff. Let's just keep adding more stuff to everything. And actually throughout this lockdown and consideration, people have realized that they need a lot less, and they want more personal connection, more understanding, more humility. And it's not everybody, but I think there's a big chunk of individuals worldwide asking, you know, what are we doing and what do we really want, and how, you know, how much less can we manage on to get what we really want?
Yeah, absolutely. Tracy, we're on about 30 minutes. I want to be respectful of your time. So I like to spend the last 10 minutes or so, usually, of the podcast with some slightly more quick-fire questions. So if you could give just one piece of advice to someone moving into their first MD or CEO, what would that be?
Don't expect to know everything, and be open-minded enough to learn and listen way more than you talk until you feel comfortable with speaking out.
Brilliant. And I get a sense that you, I think it's come through really clearly that you're a really passionate, committed, lifelong learner. So what are you learning about, maybe reading about right now?
So for me, I love the beauty industry, of course, and I've been looking at this whole, you know, non-opening of beauty salons at my role at Cosmetic Executive Women, and obviously mentorship and support. So I'm always looking at the neuroscience of learning, because I learn very differently to everybody else. And actually both my kids are real academics. Right. Ava's just got, you know, A star, and is going off to King's University, and Josh has a degree in civil engineering. So for me, it's all about learning how people learn, so the neuroscience. And the other thing that I'm really interested in, because I think it leans into skincare, beauty and mental health, is gut health. So those are the two things, and you know, that is everything. That's how you sleep, that's the exercise that you do, that's how you manage stress. It's what you eat, and it's what you put on your skin. So I'm very curious about all of that.
Amazing. And what are perhaps the one or two books that you've read throughout your career, lifetime, that really had a significant impact on you?
I suppose one of my favourites is Loop Tao by Bruce Poon. And he built a successful travel agency and brought in local communities to build hotels and businesses. And it's through his whole it's out of print now, but I think you can get it on eBay. Any leader should absolutely read it. I mean, I was on the edge of my seat, and I've read it a few times when he when he was kind of getting himself out of Tibet and Bhutan, and going through that whole process to how he evolved a business from his garage, his bedroom, into his garage, and how he recognized that he had to, evolve and change. And sometimes in business, the people that you start out the journey with are not the people that you end up leading and running your company. And so that kind of helped me to be, very open-minded about, what's next. There's a great book called This Could Be Our Future by Yancey Strickler, A Culture Code by Daniel Coyle. I could go on and on and on, really. One of my favourite books from a wellbeing perspective is How to Look Younger and Live Longer, and that is by a guy called Gaylord Houser. And so for kind of health and wellness, and he talks about gut health and mindfulness and the physical approach. He's a fitness, health and wellbeing advisor to the rich and famous in Hollywood. So for me, anything that has a broad perspective and talks about culture and talks about self-care and talks about, failure, I'm really interested in.
Yeah, I think the Culture Code is one of the best books I've found in terms of building great teams and building great cultures. I only stumbled across it upon it about a year ago, but I think it's an absolutely fantastic book.
Yeah, because it's been out a while, right, that book?
Yeah, it has, absolutely.
So I think that try and read as much as possible. And if you come into my office, there's self-help books everywhere, and I don't read all of them all the way through, but I do dip in and out, because I think that there are times when I have this belief that I'd far rather do things under inspiration than desperation. And so I look for as many things as possible to inspire me on a daily basis.
I love that. Absolutely love that. Final question, Tracy, which you've given me quite a nice segue into. I'm just wondering, do you have any particular routines, habits, ways of working, practices that you have that are really effective for you and sort of help you stay at your best, stay energized, stay healthy, stay focused? What do you do in that respect?
I always talk about this when I do my interview. So the things that I do is I meditate every morning. I do a 9-minute meditation, and if it doesn't feel right, I go again and again and again until I can face the day. Obviously, there are times when there are real time constraints and I can't do it, and I just have to, get going. But I meditate first thing in the morning. I body brush and face brush, and have done for 20 plus years. I never wash with warm water. I only ever shower in cold water. So that is that ritual. I intermittent fast and have been doing that since I was 49. My biggest fast has been 16 days at an amazing clinic in Germany called Booking and Wilhelmi. So I believe that regeneration of gut is what keeps us young, is what keeps us agile. And I think that I read a lot on, people that continuously exercise. And so now understanding that cortisol and adrenaline, it leads to severe inflammation. If you don't find a way to bring that down, then you hit the aging process. And there's lots of, as we age, there's big impact on that. So I'm very mindful of what I eat. I try to sleep well. One of the things that I suppose, gave me a real understanding is I wanted to learn a Beyoncé dance routine. It was something that was on my cosmic shopping list. And I learned a routine, and it took me 16 hours to learn 2 minutes of dance.
It's to
Love on Top. So if anyone wants to kind of see what I learned, go and watch Love on Top. I can't promise you I did it as good as Beyoncé, but I did do it. I did do it with my daughter, and my daughter picked it up in 4 hours. And I couldn't understand why she was just practicing the steps when I was giving it my all every time he said, and we'll do it again, and we'll do it again, and we'll do it again, because obviously that's my nature. And this is the process of learning differently, right? So Ava was just like stepping, you know, one step, but not putting the dance moves in. Every time we did a run, I was like putting the dance moves in and trying to get it all. And I thought, what is she doing? And when we got to the end and he said, right, we need to nail it this time, she just put on this whole show. She got every step perfectly, the moves, the hand gestures, the face, everything. And actually you can see me, because they're recorded and they're on my social media, so if anyone wants to look, they're there. But you could see me with my mouth almost open, that my daughter had just nailed this session. Yeah, you know, I was slightly behind her in pace. I mean, I'd got it, but what I recognized is, how does that woman do, you know, a 2-hour show or something like Coachella, and I'm struggling with 2 minutes? And so at 50, the light bulb went on, and it was like, if you want to succeed in life, you really have to be the athlete in your own life. That means good sleep, that means good exercise, that means, you know, being thoughtful, it means having gratitude, it means being, you know, present. And so that was my aha moment of, you know, heading into my 50s, that actually I have the right and I have the duty to be my own personal athlete to succeed in the life that I want. So if I'm not looking after my mental health and the physical side of my body, I can never be the best version of me. And so that was just like a wow. And from then on, we went on to do, you know, Jenny from the Block and To the Left, Irreplaceable by Beyoncé. So, you know, I've nailed a few dance moves now, which is great. But that's my philosophy. Be the athlete in your own life. You have a duty to yourself to live the best life possible. And everything else that goes on around that is just cream.
Yeah. I can't think of a better point to wrap up this episode. I absolutely love that, being the personal athlete of your own life. Tracy, if people want to find out more about you or maybe connect with you, what's the best way to do that?
They can reach me on LinkedIn. They can follow me on Instagram, Tracy L. Woodward. So on social, or, you know, come through to you and then come back to me. I'm always open for conversations. I love to mentor, support and guide. And sometimes, you know, someone just says, look, you know, I need a bit of help. Can I just chat to you? I just need to think something through. You know, the one thing that I have tons of is common sense. And I think that I have the common sense because I didn't have an academic upbringing. And I learned how to nurture that, to keep myself safe, to be able to succeed in life, and to evolve and to, you know, end up being at 50 plus, you know, what I consider the athlete and controller of my own life. And, you know, and I have failed, you know, 2 failed marriages. I've left roles that I've been unhappy in. I've changed my life. I've moved to other parts of the country. You know, I've learned a lot about myself. And I think that, you know, sometimes someone just says, look, you know, I just need 10 minutes of your time to talk something through. And I'm really happy to do that, because thankfully I've had many, many people throughout my career offer me 10 minutes, 2 hours and years of advice and counsel and support. So I'm really, really happy to pass that on. So feel free to reach out.
That's incredible. What a lovely offer. Tracy, thank you so much for your time this afternoon on the podcast. It's been an amazing conversation. I've really loved chatting to you, and I just know that everyone who listens to this episode will take so much from it. So thank you once again.
Thanks, Ben. Thanks for the opportunity.
So there you have it, folks, my interview with Tracy Woodward. From my perspective, that was absolutely jam-packed with pearls of wisdom and golden nuggets that we can take away and use. I really hope you found it useful. And if you did, it would be amazing if you could share the link out via your social media channels and also subscribe on iTunes. Both of those things really do help us spread the word, build the following, all of which enables us to keep bringing you more and more interviews with fantastic leaders. And don't forget, as a special bonus for you, I've been working with a brilliantly talented artist over in Italy to produce a visual summary of the first five episodes to help you recap and remember all that you've learned and heard. If you'd like to get hold of those, simply type www.ben-morton.com/podcast directly into your web browser and you'll be able to sign up and get those sent directly to your inbox. Please do type that directly in the browser rather than doing a Google search on it, or you might not end up on the right page. That's it for this episode. Take care, folks. See you again soon, and lead on.
When people say things to you, more often than not, they're trying to help you. And yet, if you take it personally, it can get in the way of that help.
Yeah, incredible.
So when you get really senior, I think it's really important to try and remember that.
And I think what a brilliant piece of advice for life in general, not just leadership and not just learning to ride a horse, right? Kind of relax more, go with the movement, and things will be good.
Yeah, I know. It's amazing, isn't it, how we had a session for the Money Hub team actually a year or so ago. I don't know if you know, but mental health is quite a big issue for STEM, in that a lot of people find communication quite difficult or awkward. It's not a natural part, and so therefore, by not communicating, sometimes issues get bottled up. So we had a person coming to talk about how you can deal with that kind of issue, if you like. And the thing that stood out to me again was that they said that our brains like to it's like a seesaw, and it always wants to be either in the past or in the future, but it never wants to sit in equilibrium in the present.
Right.
And I thought, oh my God, that's amazing, isn't it? It's so true. Our brains are always either a million miles in front or thinking a million miles back. But he was just saying that we just need to steady them and just be in the present. And actually, to be honest, that's going to be, the most useful thing you can kind of do. And I've not forgotten that either. And that was only a couple of years ago.
It's incredible. Sam, there is so much I think we can learn from, use, apply from that conversation. So I really appreciate your time, taking time out of your busy day to come on the show. I know everyone listening is gonna love it and take so much away from it. So one final time, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Well, thanks for having me. It's been fun.
So there you have it, folks, my conversation with Sam Seaton. For me, some of the most powerful stuff that she shared was around sticking with a decision until you have a definitive answer one way or another. And her view that when you're in the grey, just keep going, because grey isn't no, it's not yes, it's actually nothing at all. So as I say, I hope you found that episode massively valuable. If you did, it would be incredible if you could share the link out via your social media and also subscribe to the podcast via iTunes. It helps us grow the audience and enables us to keep bringing you more and more interviews with fantastic leaders and CEOs such as Sam. That's it for this episode. Take care, folks, and lead on.